Hail and well met, my Inklings. Welcome back to Catawampus Readings, the podcast where beginnings and introductions suddenly unfold before us like a staggering vista inside a closet. That's right, we've finally gotten around to the Chronicles of Narnia, like I promised I would months ago. This series counts as a classic not because of its age, but rather because of its ubiquity and impact on the world of stories that I grew up in. That might seem incredibly self-centered, and in a way, it is. But I'm sure all of us have judged classics in this light. How much of an impact has this particular story had on the more recent, and generally more appealing, works that I've read during my lifetime? So today, we'll be taking a look at the first book published in the Chronicles of Narnia series, though not the first book in the sequence. Let me explain why. C.S. Lewis wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe specifically for his goddaughter, Lucy. This was the first book he published in the series, and might have originally been meant to stand alone, rather than in a series. The more important part to keep in mind for our purposes here is that this was the first time Lewis had introduced these characters and this world, so even though it's technically the second book in the series, it reads like a first book. I might even argue that several of the books in this series read like first books, but I think that's a mini-series we can get into another time, provided you Inklings are interested in that. For those of you who have somehow avoided exposure to today's title, here's how Amazon introduces the story of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Narnia, the land beyond the wardrobe door, a secret place frozen in eternal winter, a magical country waiting to be set free. Lucy is the first to find the secret of the wardrobe in the professor's mysterious old house. At first, her brothers and sisters don't believe her when she tells of her visit to the land of Narnia. But soon Edmund, then Peter, and Susan step through the wardrobe themselves. In Narnia, they find a country buried under the evil enchantment of the White Witch. When they meet the lion Aslan, they realize they've been called to a great adventure and bravely join the battle to free Narnia from the witch's sinister spell. Okay, so they summarized the entire book in a single paragraph and left very little to the imagination. I think maybe I should stop calling the pitch on the back of the book a summary, because whenever it actually summarizes, I'm never happy with it. I don't like the way this story is introduced here, because it's so close to being what I would want, and yet it's not. It uses some good emotional power words like mysterious, buried, and sinister. It pulls on the emotions, and yet the problem is that just from this paragraph, I already know almost everything that's going to happen in the book. The kids find a magic world, it's trapped under an enchantment, they meet the lion Aslan, and they're here to join the battle, and I would have to be narratively blind to think they weren't going to win in the end. And this isn't a very long book, so the chances of a twist are relatively small. In other words, the summary spoiled the entire plot, and now I feel no motivation at all to actually read the book. The pitch on the back needs to be more than just a summary. It's the hook. It's the promise to the person holding the book. This is a story worth reading. If you don't leave them wondering what's going to happen or how it's going to work out, then you've lost a big chunk of your audience. 1 star out of 5, bad intro. No promise and no hook. Moving on to the book proper, let's take a look at how the author himself introduces the story he wants to tell. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. Chapter 1. Lucy Looks into the Wardrobe. Once there were 4 children whose names were Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy. This story is about something that happened to them when they were sent away from London during the war because of the air raids. They were sent to the house of an old professor who lived in the heart of the country, 10 miles from the nearest railway station and 2 miles from the nearest post office. He had no wife and lived in a very large house with a housekeeper called Mrs. McCready and 3 servants. Their names were Ivy, Margaret, and Betty, but they do not come into the story very much. He himself was a very old man with shaggy white hair, which grew over most of his face as well as on his head, and they liked him almost at once. But on the first evening when he came out to meet them in the front door, he was so odd-looking that Lucy, who was the youngest, was a little afraid of him. And Edmund, who was the next youngest, wanted to laugh and had to keep on pretending he was blowing his nose to hide it. As soon as they had said goodnight to the professor and gone upstairs on the first night, the boys came into the girls' room and they all talked it over. "We've fallen on our feet, no mistake," said Peter. "This is going to be perfectly splendid. The old chap will let us do anything we like."
"I think he's an old dear," said Susan.
"Oh, come off it," said Edmund, who was tired and pretending not to be tired, which always made him bad-tempered. "Don't go on talking like that."
"Like what?" said Susan. "And anyway, isn't it time you were in bed?"
"Trying to talk like mother," said Edmund. "And who are you to say when I'm to go to bed? Go to bed yourself."
"Hadn't we all better go to bed?" said Lucy. "There's sure to be a row if we're heard talking up here."
"No, there won't," said Peter. "I tell you, this is the sort of house where no one's gonna mind what we do. Anyway, they won't hear us. It's a 10-minute walk from here down to the dining room, and any amount of stairs and passages between."
"What's that noise?" said Lucy suddenly.
It was a far larger house than she had ever been in before, and the thought of all those long passages and rows of doors leading into empty rooms was beginning to make her feel a little creepy.
"It's only a bird, silly," said Edmund.
"It's an owl," said Peter. "This is going to be a wonderful place for birds. I shall go to bed now. I say, let's go and explore tomorrow. You might be able to find anything in a place like this. Did you see those mountains as we came along? And the woods? There might be eagles. There might be stags. There will be hawks. Badgers," said Lucy. "Foxes," said Edmund. "Rabbits," said Susan. But when the next morning came, there was a steady rain falling, so thick that when you looked out the window, you could see neither the mountains, nor the woods, nor even the stream in the garden.
"Of course it would be raining," said Edmund.
They had just finished their breakfast with the professor and were upstairs in the room he had set apart for them, a long, low room with two windows looking out in one direction and two in the other.
"Do stop grumbling, Ed," said Susan. 10 to 1 it'll clear up in an hour or so, and in the meantime we're pretty well off. There's a wireless and lots of books."
"Not for me," said Peter. "I'm going to explore the house." Everyone agreed to this, and that was how the adventures began. It was the sort of house that you never seemed to come to the end of, and it was full of unexpected places. The first few doors they tried led only into spare bedrooms, as everyone had expected they would. But soon they came to a very long room full of pictures, and there they found a suit of armor, and after that was a room all hung with green with a harp in one corner. And then there were 3 steps down and 5 steps up, and then a kind of little upstairs hall that had a door that led out onto a balcony, and then a whole series of rooms that led into each other and were lined with books, most of them very old books, and some bigger than a Bible in a church. And shortly after, they looked into a room that was quite empty except for one big wardrobe, the sort that has a looking glass in the door. There was nothing else in the room at all, except a dead blue bottle on the windowsill. "Nothing here," said Peter, and they all trooped out again, all except Lucy. She stayed behind because she thought it would be worthwhile trying the door of the wardrobe, even though she felt almost sure it would be locked. To her surprise, it opened quite easily, and 2 mothballs dropped out. The one big complaint I've heard about C.S. Lewis's writing is that he's very pedantic and dry in his descriptions. And I can see from this introduction why people would say that. In short, because it's true. He's very much in the mode of telling rather than showing. It is this way, and I'm going to tell you how it is so we can move on to the next thing. This results in a greater narrative distance than if, for instance, we'd been treated to a description of the dusty smell of the room, the starchy cleanness of the sheets, the squeak of rusty bedsprings, and the chill of the hardwood floor beyond the edge of the threadbare rug. The narrator in this introduction is an omniscient, detached voice from the ether, who is neither part of the story nor particularly invested in it at this point. I think it has the sound of a father or a grandfather telling a bedtime story to a child, which
is an accurate description of why Lewis was writing the story in the first place. That makes a lot of sense. So, like the pitch from Amazon, we're left with an intriguing but emotionally dry series of statements. I would write this introduction differently if I were the author, but owing to some tangled quirks of copyright law in the UK and worldwide, that's unlikely to happen anytime soon. I'll give this introduction a somewhat disappointing 3 out of 5. It could be considerably better, but it does its job in that it introduces the main characters, their personalities, and the world they're living in. But if there's one lesson I'd like to pull from this, it's that telling instead of showing can be a very useful tool in the writer's kit. Imagine, if you will, an introduction that painted the characters and their world in these stiff, inflexible sentences, stating one thing and then the next without showing us anything. Then, shifting from the familiar into the unknown for the rest of the story, where details are shown in vivid color to contrast the familiar world. It's very much along the lines of the introduction to MGM's The Wizard of Oz being shot in black and white, and then the world of Oz itself being suddenly in bright, glorious color. This is something to keep in mind when using a disembodied narrator as the vehicle for your story. That's all I have for you this week. The random question of the day is, if you were a hot beverage, what would you be? And a bonus question, who would you be served to? Until next time, stay safe, my Inklings. Keep active, stay consistent, and remember to hydrate. This has been your host, Inkfire, and you have been an audience I deeply appreciate. I'll see you on the other side. Thank you for listening to Catawampus Readings. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. If you're interested in supporting Catawampus Readings and would like early access to new episodes, you can sign up to donate monthly at patreon.com/inkfire. Special thanks to our patrons Corvus, Valkyrie, and Barry Marie.